Welcome back to Highlands Postcards from the Finish Line. My name is Bob Babbitt, and with Highlands, stop your cramp, not your race. We're also brought to you by Polar, Chase Your Destiny. With us, Karen Smyers, Ironman World Champion from 1995, also three-time ITU World Champion, two short course, one long course, and all sorts of other great wins over the years. How you doing, Kara?
I'm doing great.
So is this a first experience for you guiding a visually impaired athlete this morning?
This was my first opportunity as a guide. It was a blast. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Now, how visually impaired is your athlete?
I was able to ease into it a little bit. So she has pretty sight. She could see blobs. So
okay.
I didn't have to tell her about every single thing. And she was sighted. She degenerated. So
right. It
helps a lot, I think, when you have been sighted before.
Right.
And raced a lot as a sighted athlete. So she was pretty self-sufficient. And
did you touch elbows?
Basically,
she
actually used a tether that was like a race belt, you'd use in triathlon. A little elastic.
Yeah.
So we could use our arms normally, and to be honest, I forgot I was guiding most of the time. We just chatted away. It went by really fast. She had to walk a lot because she's just been treated for a different cancer.
Yes.
And so she's just coming back from the treatment and doesn't have the energy yet to run. So we did a lot of walking, so we got to really enjoy the day.
You know what's interesting? I guided a guy named Tom Sullivan, who was a blind entertainer. He's totally blind. And I especially in running events with all the cracks and all the little dots, dot things, I was a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Just because you have to thinking for both.
Yeah.
And you have to be looking for everything.
Yeah.
And I had to go take a nap afterwards. I was pretty emotional. I was just like, oh my God, you're on high alert.
Yeah.
For
especially
every
curb. You feel so responsible when you're new to it. You just, you feel like you have to point out,
everything.
Everything. I did envision a couple times, I thought, all right, if she trips on that, am I going to catch her?
What
if she hurts herself? I'll feel so bad,
Exactly. Exactly. Tommy was telling me, he said the biggest mistake he made was when he went skiing. He had a guide who had never done it before, and the guy didn't know his right from his left very well.
Oh, Jesus.
Turn left. No, the other way. I was like, okay, that's a little bit of a problem. So, Karen, growing up, running, right? Was that you primarily running through high school?
No, mostly swimming.
Oh, swimming first,
yep.
And then when did
and
running
come in?
To be honest,
I also, like in high school, I was captain of the gymnastics team, captain of tennis team.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
You did it all.
I just had to do a sport every season, So I was not great in gymnastics or tennis, but I loved it.
What did you do in gymnastics?
Everything, but not everything very well. I did more of the strength stuff, so the bars and the vault were more my forte. The beam was more for entertainment of the rest of the squad.
As you were trying to balance on that thing.
But
tennis.
Nice lifelong sport,
Exactly.
It helps me at my family tournament that we do every other year. Yeah. No, I don't, because my whole family's so competitive, but at least I can participate without feeling like I'm a huge liability to my partner.
So running came in when? Was that in high school?
So no, mostly,
more college.
I got a little taste of running just at the physical fitness test that you have to do in high school. And I always really, wanted to do well in that.
Of course.
Just competitive nature, I guess. So I knew I had some kind of talent running, but I wasn't until college when we were running for preseason for swimming that I started to really get a taste more of the running. We actually came and did the Tufts 10K here in Boston as part of our motivation for getting. The swim team came. The Harvard women's swim team put us up, and both the Harvard and the Princeton team ran the Tufts 10K. And so that was my first road race ever, and I had a blast. And thought, I'm going to do some running sometime. And so then what happened was I was a walk-on to the spring track. My college roommate was a runner, and she kind of encouraged me. And so that's kind of where I got my first experience.
And was that mainly cross-country?
No, because it was spring. So it was mile on the track, half mile and mile.
Okay.
Yep. And then when I moved to Boston, that same roommate started doing triathlon. So she kind of gave me the idea. And so we started kind of training together, racing together, and meeting tons of friends. And
Did you have success in that triathlon right away since you had the swim and the run?
Yeah, that certainly helped. But the bike took me a nice, good, long time to really get good at. So, you know, I had in the smaller races, yeah, I had quick success.
Right.
But when I got to experience people that were good riders, the lack of biking really hurt me.
And in those, that era, really the top people were on the West Coast.
That dinosaur era.
That dinosaur era, when the earth was still cooling.
Yes.
Right. You had San Diego, and you had all the athletes there. When did you first go up against some of the?
It was the Bay State Triathlon. So Dave McGilvery used to put on a bunch of great races. It was kind of the only thing going. There was a series of races that he did, and he brought in a bunch of big people and put up some prize money. And in that race, I was, you know, scared as could be, but I had started racing in the elite field anyway. And I remember Colleen Cannon and Allison Rowe. Oh,
wow.
And I think maybe Kirsten Hansen, or there were a couple of other name athletes that I'd seen in magazines, you know. And I ended up winning the thing and passing Allison Rowe on the run.
You passed Allison Rowe, who was the marathoner, right? Passed her on the run. Wow.
So that was, my first, like.
You can drop the mic right there.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this has been
quit.
A good.
Yeah,
this has been a good career. I just knocked off Allison Rowe.
I actually won a TV that I used for.
There used to be
some pretty practical prizes back in the day.
I like that. So at that point, was there money?
I'm trying to remember if there was actually.
Or
I know
TVs.
I won a TV, and there might not. Although I'm wondering how he got, because Scott Tinley came and Dave Scott, and so I bet he did have money too.
He
now
must
that
have
I
had
think
some
about
money.
It,
those guys came.
Yeah.
So when did you feel like, okay, I could make a living at this, or are you still
so
thinking about
that? This was my first triathlon was in 1984.
Yeah.
That Bay State was 1985. I had started racing kind of in the pro elite division just because you could, you know.
Right.
And. But I held a full-time job until 89. And during I worked at a computer consulting company right on the same block as the Elliott Lounge.
Yes.
And that's kind of how I met my husband.
Your husband owned the Elliott Lounge. Yeah. I like it. Yeah.
So, my beer habit was taken care of, my triathlon habit. So the company went on halftime for a summer. We were kind of short on business. So during the halftime, I was able to put some time into biking. And then I was able to sort of make the next leap up. And that's, you know, at the time I was still accumulating a little prize money. I was keeping it in a trust fund.
Sure.
Because back then you had to maintain amateur status if
you
had
you wanted
any,
to be Olympic.
Yeah.
And at that point, triathlon wasn't an Olympic sport, but there was talk.
No, but we were hoping,
We were hopeful.
You know, ever from 88 on, there was some talk like maybe this year or maybe 4 years from now.
Yes.
So I definitely had it in the back of my mind. And I'd actually gone to an Olympic trials for running. I ran the marathon in 88 in the Olympic trials, and as much as I knew I was no way close to making an Olympic team, it was still, you know, being
experience.
In the Olympic trials, you
Absolutely.
Still wanted to be an amateur and whatever to be a part of the whole thing. So,
So you had to keep all the money in a trust fund. That's interesting.
Yeah, but it was great because I was working and I developed, you know, a little nest egg that I was able to then, when I went full time, I didn't have the financial pressure that some of the people, like nowadays, you know, at Team Psycho, we help some of these up-and-coming athletes with a little stipend because how do you live? Like, how do you devote yourself full-time to the sport to get to the level you need to be these days to compete and actually win money without having someone help you? You know, like, financially, it's so hard.
Well, and especially, it's so much more iron-centric nowadays, and which means you're doing, you know, 2, 3, 4 of those type of races, the recovery time, if you don't win any money and getting there and putting yourself, it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
The demands on these guys. So, but throughout, you didn't go to the dark side, to the long distance stuff for a while.
I used to say you were, never.
Never,
like,
right?
People are crazy.
Yeah.
So, I was very happy with my Olympic distance for a long time. And, I started getting a feel, you know, when person after person would be like, oh, have you done the Ironman? And I'm like, no, I've just won the world championships at the short distance.
<They're> like,
they'd be
what
like, what's
that?
Yeah. So I finally realized, you know, Ironman's kind of where it's at in terms of just prestige and media.
Sure.
And it wasn't until I went and watched it one year that I really was
I
went and watched Aaron and Paula battle it out. It was after, I think, the World Championships were in Australia.
Yeah.
So on the way back, we stopped to watch Ironman. And I was like, wow. I was so intrigued at the idea that it was a race and not just a sufferfest. Like, I just had it in my mind. It was who could take the most pain, you know, whack me across the head again. Okay, I can take it. But when I saw those guys like racing, I was like, oh, wow, this is a lot more, you know.
Yes. And it's funny how it changed because the Punto sisters in the mid 80s, they walked every aid station.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They would walk to aid station, which meant that Paula saw them doing it and they're winning, so she would do that.
Right.
Well, then in 87, Paula is bent over stretching an aid station when Aaron Baker goes running by.
Right.
She's like, I'm not walking any aid station.
Yeah.
So that changed everything.
Yeah,
then Paula needed to come back and win in 88 and go, 901 or whatever the heck she did.
Right.
So at that point, you realize, oh, it's a race. Then you want in.
Interesting, to me.
Like, you didn't want to just go out there and suffer. You wanted to be against the best in the world racing.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really imagine I could race that distance probably until I'd been in the sport a good 5-6 years.
Yes.
Just being on the bike for 25 miles seemed like forever to me in the beginning, you know.
Right.
But
then the bike became a real.
I built up to it.
You became one of the best cyclists.
Yeah, I did eventually. Biking became more of a strength for sure.
Right.
Although in Hawaii, it was still, I mean, when I was racing Paula, that was still my Achilles heel for sure.
Yes. When did you come over to Kona for the first time to race?
So my first one was 93.
Okay. Yep. Fourth?
Yeah.
So you got fourth that first year, 93. And did you come back in 94 too?
Yes, second.
Second and four. And so then going into 95, did you have a sense that, you know what, the progression is good.
I kind of knew everything that I had to know at that point.
Right.
And, Paula had been light years ahead of me in those first two. But I had gotten closer in 94. And I knew that I had made up a lot of time in the first half of the marathon. And then I kind of just settled into a kind of applaud. So my goal in 95 was to run more like I had the first half for the whole marathon. And I knew that I'd made up a good chunk of time. And if I could keep that up, that I would make up more time.
And but if you're ever going to be thinking about, oh, well, I got second, that was the year because she had a huge lead off the bike. But you stayed the course and ran.
Yeah,
because
you
never know.
I wasn't really, my main goal when I got off the bike wasn't thinking like, oh, I still got to try and win this thing. It was, I've got to try and get closer just to make it interesting because I really felt that the women were getting gypped in terms of the
TV coverage. You're right.
Because she had won so many years that they were finding it not very interesting. So they were really just
That's
flashing.
A really good point.
I mean, they'd done so many stories about Paula that they're sort of like, we can't do this again. And second place was way far back, so I just, for the good of the all-female kind.
I'm going to take it for the team.
At least try and make this into a race.
Yes.
At least if I'm catching her, then maybe they'll make it into a story.
Well, exactly.
So that was sort of my, and I didn't want to be humiliated either. I'm like, 12 minutes, because I knew I could race her at the short course, and so I thought, what is it about this long race? So anyway, I got off the bike. I was pretty, at one point, pretty disgusted with myself that I'd gotten so far behind. But
Dave
Scott gave me a little advice at the halfway point. I remember coming out of Kauai High, and he was there, and he gave me a time split, like, 8 minutes, Karen, And I remember sort of standing up on my pedals and saying, like, I'm not taking this sitting down, Dave. I'm really mad. I'm trying to keep up, And he kind of looked at me and read my body language, and he's like, Karen, you got to do your own race. Like, forget
about
Paula. And it kind of sunk in that, I'd been beating myself up, judging myself on her, and who knows, what she, I mean,
you don't know
she
what
was having the race
through.
Of her life,
yeah.
But maybe she went too hard, So I finally kind of let up on my beating myself up, and I think that helped me to just say, when I got to the run, just have the best run you can possibly have, and you'll start chipping away and see how close you can get.
When did you start feeling like you were making up some ground? Because that always gets you excited when you,
I took
a minute, or I took 30 seconds or something.
Yeah. Well, I think I knew that I had made up like 4 or 5 minutes in the first half the year before. So I said, or I think it was even in like 8 miles. I don't know how I knew that. But so I said, make up 30 seconds a mile. At 8 miles, see if you can be 4 minutes closer. And I was getting splits that said exactly that. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'll catch her at 24 if I keep this up, So I was like, 4 minutes every 8 miles. And so the next eight, I was kind of getting some splits. And at one point, I was like, oops, not quite enough. So I think I'd made up another 2.5 in the next eight. And I was like, ooh, well, at least I'm getting close. At this point, I might not catch her. But let's just keep chipping right. away. And, you know, of course, at one point I didn't realize that she was helping me a little bit by walking backwards on the course.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was really kind of handing it to me. But, yeah, so, I mean, it was nice when you're in second. You get the time splits, you know, when
right.
you're in first
you
not
really
so
don't.
Much.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. Yeah. So as you're, you know, you take the turn and you're coming down, you're running out of real estate. And were people yelling to you? She's walking,
yeah.
she's
well,
hurting.
Well, I remember clearly the top of Palani when you turned down.
Yes.
Getting a split that said I was a minute 40 behind, and I'm like, you know, you're so
you're
close, you can hear the finish line.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get to go there, but you can hear it. And I thought, there's just no way she's gonna let me catch her at this point. You know,
right.
she's too close. And I said, about a minute 40, if I can, you know, get within like a camera length, you know, that would be cool.
It'd be good
you
for
know?
TV.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I remember
good
just
for,
thinking,
good
yeah.
for womankind.
Someone's like, you can get her, and I'm like, yeah, if I can run a 6 minute mile, which I know I can, but I still was game. You know,
yes.
so I remember running down the hill. Hard and I felt like I was sprinting as I came around the corner and I see the TV coverage later. I'm like, that's your sprint? But anyway, it was fast enough to when she was walking. She started walking right before I caught her.
Right.
And I remember when I saw her right as she was taking the turn onto Hualalai, and I remember the hair on my arms just stood up because I was like, this is the coolest race ever. Like, I don't know
I
if I can
the
catch
Iron
her,
Man.
But yeah, like, we're going to be on a lead drive together. So I remember that being sort of my favorite moment of the whole race, really, was just seeing her and knowing
yes.
the possibilities, you know. But anyway, then when I turned, she had all of a sudden stopped walking just as I was
yeah,
about. And I remember closing on her
yeah.
a lot faster than I expected. I was expecting to have to dig in and sprint to the finish, and all of a sudden I'm going by her, and it was surprising.
I mean, it
surprising.
Happened so quick.
Yeah,
all of
really
a sudden
did.
You're chase,
yeah.
I'm
then,
winning.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And so I was really still processing it as I was going down Leahy Drive. I looked back several times thinking, you know, was
okay.
she cramping? What was happening? Like, is she
going
to come back
really
on me?
Yeah.
yeah. And I didn't see her. So I was just like, oh, my God, you know. And so I remember, you know, high-fiving people, but the announcer going, here comes Paula Newby Fraser, you know.
Did they say
the communication system was not quite as good back then, right?
They didn't really have a tracker on anybody.
Yeah. So, they had no idea what had happened because it happened so close to the finish.
Wow.
And so it took them a while to figure out I wasn't Paula. And then, yeah.
And then were you still around when Paula finally got to the finish line?
Yeah, yeah. I stayed at the finish. I mean, everybody was, I'm like, she was right there. I'm like,
right.
what happened? Like,
yeah.
I was as confused as anyone. I saw Paul go running back towards her.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was worried for
of
her.
Of course.
For sure, you know. And so I remember just waiting, and then, you know, Isabel
yes.
came across. And then
Fernanda.
Yeah, but, for you know, you could see Paula was walking when Fernanda
went by
her. Around her. Yeah. It's a race. What the
it's
heck?
It's a race.
You know? Yeah.
Fourth or fifth. Yeah, yeah come on yeah. now. What are you doing?
I mean, it was not much of a difference to Paula whether she got third and fourth in that
no.
race, but it was a big difference for Fernanda to get third. You know?
Absolutely.
I don't blame her at all.
Absolutely. So did you any conversations with Paula or?
You know, at the time that I went by her, no.
No, of course
yeah.
not then.
And
no,
when she finished,
later.
Yeah, I mean, I gave her a hug, I think, and I remember I was crying when she
yes.
finished. I didn't cry when I finished, but I cried when she finished because it was just very moving to
yes,
see,
it was.
You know, this incredible champion, you know, she's walking in her bare feet and just like the determination at the same time as I'm sure she was so disappointed in herself
right.
in a way, the way it turned out, especially that she had said it was her last one. And I, you know, I just thought it was, I don't know, it was sad in a way
yes.
that you didn't want to see her end her career that
exactly.
way, which I am so thankful that I helped her not end her career that way. She's like, I'm not letting that girl beat me on my last race.
So, yeah, and it was interesting because I think Paula got carried away when Mark said, I'm retiring. And she's like, well, you know what, maybe I'll retire too. But, you know, it is a little presumptuous when you say, this is my last race, I'm going to go and win and move
yeah,
on. Because,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
you sort of have to have it in the back of your head, I might not win, maybe wait till after I win to
yeah.
say something.
Well, I think she even, I don't know that she ever presumed she was going to win
no,
the
just
way
saying,
that
yeah.
everybody else presumed she was going to win.
That's
and I
a good
think
point.
That bothered her. I think she's even said that, you know, people had no idea what I had to put in to be able to be that good every year. They just thought, oh, you mail it in. You
right.
know, of course you're going to win. And I think that must have been hard
The expectations were so high all the time.
Yeah, that they kind of just didn't appreciate, you know, that there was a risk every year that she was going to get beaten, that there's always new people coming up and gunning for her every year. And she makes it look, she made it look so easy that I think it maybe came back to, she came back to resent it a little bit, you know.
So how was it coming back the following year?
Defending
champion?
Yeah, you know, for sure, a little more pressure, but I kind of enjoyed it.
Of course.
I kind of liked being the center of attention, you know. It hadn't gotten old for me, for sure.
Never,
I was sure nervous as can be, but to be honest, my training had gone better than ever. I was in the best shape that I'd ever been in for that race, and it's the one I wish I could go back and do again because I just made strategic errors with my nutrition, and I thought I could break 3 hours on the run that year, and I really think I, you know, if I had done everything right, I probably could have. But because I knew I was running better than when I ran 3:05 the year before, and I came off the bike in a great position.
Yes,
so, and I think Paul had gotten a penalty, so she had passed me at the end of the bike, but because she had a penalty, she had to wait in transition. So I ran out ahead of her. I'm like, I'm starting the run ahead of Paula. Like,
this is this gravy, yeah.
Of course, there was this new
girl. Natasha, who's waving and kissing babies. And you're like, who
exactly
is this? Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
So anyway, they end up having this fantastic race against each other. And mile three, I'm like throwing up for like a mile or so, just everything in my stomach. And so, and I think Fernanda had passed me.
Yes.
So she was running in third, and I finally pulled it back together and started running again, I was able to finally catch Fernanda and pass her in the energy lab. So I held on to third, but it was not pretty because all my nutrition had been
You lost it all.
Lost, yeah.
Was you'd won world titles? Was winning Kona, was that bigger than the other things you won? Did it impact you more?
I would say yes, yeah, for sure. Definitely more just attention from the mainstream media.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, to be honest, the thing I got most attention for was probably getting cancer, you know? It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it happened, and also, you know, I'd had a string of these accidents that happened all in a row, and
the
it
storm
just made
window.
A good story, you know? So, and it was leading up to the Olympics, and I think, you know, one media outlet is like, oh, what's a good story leading into the Olympics? And someone's like, oh, there's this girl that's been hit by a truck and, you know, slashed
dealing
her leg
with
on glass, and she's got cancer too, and she's trying to make Olympic team. And they're like, okay, get her, you know. So all of a sudden there was this like period of time where, you know, all these people are calling for interviews.
Yeah.
I was like, none of that attention at all when you win the races. It's only because you have these obstacles that it made a good story. So
it's a good story. Yeah, we like good story. Yeah, we like it.
But it's kind of,
I know. But you're feeling good now? Everything is...
Yeah, pretty good, you know. I'm feeling my age a little bit, as much as I try not to. But it's fun, you know. I'll keep racing. I never really announced a retirement because I'm not ever retiring.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. So I just quietly at one point kind of gave away my pro license and started racing amateur. So
good.
The amateur field, occasionally, you know, I'll get a look like, it's not fair for you to be racing me.
Bull. That's one of my pet peeves. I want every pro to be racing as an amateur because that's what you started as an amateur.
Think of the thrill. All these people are like getting to beat all these people that used to
be
winning races. Yeah.
Yes, I love
it. So, and believe me, I am very much...
You're a good target now?
I'm low-hanging fruit.
I love it. Karen, thanks so much for taking time.
Oh,
always
it's been
a pleasure
great.
To chat.
It's so fun to have you here every year.
It's the best. And I will see you on Monday. Will you?
Yep,
now you're running? You're not running.
No, I'm not running, but I'll be out cheering
we'll get our
the
photo.
Fire Station Hill. Yep, I'm going to be looking for Elvis so I can get my annual photo with you.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Karen Smyers has been our guest. Hold on, everybody. We will be right back.